great. That's really helpful. Please don't expect me to remember any of your names, except for Joe and Megan, so you can remind me when we get to the discussion part. But it's great just to find out where you're all from and what you all do. So, you know, this wasn't really by design so much as by accident, because the course was ENVR 300, Introduction to Environmental Research. And it's much, I mean, because of our decision to shift from a content-based course to an activity-based course, the focus of the course is really on learning how to think and about and do research. And so we drafted up the learning goals. And when we got to them, you know, we came up with modules. We actually, at first, made the modules, in a sense, around content, although there are anomalies in that. And then when I actually got to this module, or close to it, I realized that this was probably a pretty crucial step. But the learning goals part will come out. So the first day of this module, we had four classes in this module, and each of 80 minutes. And the first day, I gave them more or less this presentation, although I'll explain where the differences are. And we'll also do a bit of the interaction that we did. And then we went through examples. We assigned a paper for each of the 4 days. And so they did have to read a paper for the first day, although actually that first day, the vast majority of them forgot that. And we walked through that as an example, and then on the subsequent days, we walked through the other three in turn. So the three parts of the outline for the presentation part were the why, the how, and then the example, setting up the example. So on the why, we first reminded them of the learning goals for the course. And in my case, it was thinking about what to actually do with the module. It was looking at the learning goals and realizing that unless we had something like this, we weren't going to meet our learning goals. So one of them is just to critically review, and these aren't actually what we had written exactly, but paraphrases of some of the learning goals that we had, which we introduced them to right in the beginning of the course. So to critically review and research papers, we had a whole bunch of conceptual skills, all of which fit in nicely with this exercise. And then we had group work learning goals, and one of them involved having the students play all roles in the group, and we hadn't yet met that in the course. And then there are a bunch of research skills as well, finding information, formulating questions, and designing methods to test it, and reviewing information to illuminate the question. And we touched on pretty much all these, except I guess for the first one, a little bit, but really only from one dimension and kind of, in some cases, obliquely. So then the next step was to persuade them that this is an important thing to do. And the first, actually, it's both about reading and reviewing, because we decided that actually both parts are really important. And we had a couple of exercises that were about reviewing, actually. So at least two assignments, I think, an op-ed assignment and a final proposal, major project. And in both cases, they had peer reviews that were actually marked. But although we had a little bit of guidance about how they should do that, when I got to this stage, I realized that we didn't give them as much guidance on that process as we could. So the first point was to explain how critically important critical review is to the whole scientific process. And then point out that, you know, in all of my years of school, and it's, you know, although I'm young, it's still 20, I've done lots of reading for courses, and I've reviewed, you know, dozens and dozens of papers officially and more unofficially, and yet I never learned this. You know, I mean, I never was taught this. It was never a learning goal in a course. And I actually realized that one of my mentors, just by happenstance, when we were asked to do a review together, we sat down and he told me very methodically how he went about it. And I realized that every time I do a review, I go back to those key principles. So I almost never taught. And I think a part of the reason why I almost never taught is because it's actually, given one simplistic version of critical review, it's actually very easy to do. So if you focus on the critique in the critical review, and you think of, you know, all you've got to do is find some things that they can, that they didn't do so well, then it's actually really easy, right? I mean, every paper has a zillion holes that you can poke in it. And then, it, you know, if we focus on it in that way, it just seems like, well, the more holes we poke on it, the better the review is, and, you know, the better, or at least the critical part. And that therefore, you know, and since we can all find these holes, then therefore we can all do critical review and we don't need to learn it. But, you know, I think that we probably already all had the experience of good reviews and from an author's perspective and not so good reviews. And the ones that are really helpful are the ones that are not just critical but also constructive, you know, where they actually engage their lateral and critical thinking and not just, or sorry, their lateral and constructive thinking and not just their critical thinking. And so that was a major point that I wanted to get there. And also to focus on, so not just the formal reviews, but also these informal, like peer-to-peer ones, which are really crucial for a lot of collaborations. And in the case of interdisciplinary environmental sciences, a really fundamental part, because you're so often working with people, you know, in larger projects where you can't be the expert on it. So it's clear that there are lots of different ways to do this, but we start from the assumption that it would actually help to have some key starting principles. And that's what we're hoping to give them with. And the point isn't that they wouldn't get by, right? They'd get by. They'd learn it as they go, for sure. We all did, right? But the point is to try to give them a head start in that process so that they think critically about the process and also the purpose of reading and reviewing, and that they can use that critical thinking to further that their whole scientific endeavor. So, more on the why for them personally, to understand information at its source, we told them, partly because in the translation, you know, if you're reading what other people write about what other people wrote, so, you know, reading about what A says about what B found in a paper, then there's that problem of broken telephone, and you're often not going to understand the caveats and the assumptions and the limitations. And then also to be able to understand the full context for their own purposes. And that's empowering. It's empowering to know what the primary literature says and to know that you can find out what the primary literature says. And that would help them in applying that understanding in their own work in multiple ways. The second important part is obviously that it's a part of our professional duty, both the formal and the informal reviews. And actually, it's an important way to get recognized, in a sense, because when you do good reviews, I would imagine the associate editors pay attention to that. I know sometimes they do. And those are the people at the top of the field. And so if they think that you're a smart person and can do these things well, then often that helps. And the other part is that reading papers in a constructive and rigorous way both gives you ideas about your own research, hones your thinking, and enables you to reflect on the field generally, the problems, and then also your own research. You already all know these benefits, but this is what we told them about the benefits of reading and reviewing. So then to the how. We introduced the idea of having a list of questions and solving that mystery, you know, answering those questions as you go through a paper. So we broke the paper into major sections, the introduction, the context, the research question or thesis, the methods, both data and analysis, then results and discussion. We asked them to come up, and we did this interactively, to come up with a list of questions that they might have about all these sections. And then when we asked them which one they thought would come first, and I've actually made a change to this slide, but what we did was, I told them that I didn't think that they could guess the first question, and the first question that I had in mind that they should answer was nothing to do with the paper, but just, you know, to sort out what their own purpose is. And so I think last time that was in a different slide, but this new slide I think is probably going to serve our purposes better. So the first point I think is to help them realize that, and to save them a lot of pain that I went through in getting, you know, getting given reading assignments of whole papers and reading them front to back, you know, every word in it. And I'm hoping that students can quickly avoid that problem and figure out what their purpose is in reading the paper and just read what they need to and not read what they don't. So in the purpose, in figuring out what their purpose is, helps to first obviously read the title and think about whether that's promising, and then also even to think about who the authors are and whether they're special authorities, and which obviously isn't going to be a reason not to read the paper in most circumstances, but might be a reason to pay special attention to a paper. And then the abstract, and we didn't say anything about the abstract that I remember when we actually presented this for them, but certainly will next time. And we'll introduce the idea of the abstract in a more concrete way, because I don't think they will have come across that in any formal way, and suggest that actually the abstract ought to contain some of the answers, or partial answers, to all the questions they're going to have about the paper, and that they can start to think about that and get a feel for the paper.
I think we had in the class earlier discussed the nature of an abstract, you know, say why you want to do this, say how you do this, say what you found when you did it, say why you did it. So they discussed that in broad earlier on.
Okay. Yeah. I can't actually remember when we were...
I definitely remember writing down on the chalkboard, but
okay.
It was not to me earlier.
It would have been, because this was pretty late in the course, actually. And then to suggest that also the abstract can provide a clue about how well the paper is written, how much insight might be waiting within it, although it's only a clue. So now I'll just show you and briefly talk about the questions that we suggested might be good ones to try to answer. So in the context, first, always thinking about what the author's purpose was. And actually, we spent a lot of time talking about this and getting them to understand the multiple purposes, you know, the multiple audiences, which I guess is the next question, that an author is writing for. They often, when we asked them this question, they often answered things like, you know, policymakers, that the intended audience is policymakers or the public, or, you know, and we tried to help them understand that the vast majority of scientific papers are only read by researchers, and that and the various routes through which that information might get to researchers, to the policymakers and the public. And to critique the purpose, we also asked them to think about how important they actually thought the purpose was. You know, given what they know and what they know about what might need to be known, how does the purpose of the author fit into that? And then also to think about the broader context with a step back, both in terms of the academic literature, and also just the real world, because we really focus on those connections in this course. And then with the research questions, to understand what kind of a paper it is, first, and then what the research question is. And that was actually quite difficult for them. I mean, partly because most papers have more than one research question. But partly because it's all often not that obvious. Now this is a place where we actually often got sidetracked, because our intention was to go through each of the sections and make it through each of the sections over the course of the 80 minutes. But when we got to how testable it is, we frequently got into the question of the actual methods, right? And this is supposed to be in the introduction. So the next time we do this, I think either we'll remove that or we'll make it clear that we're really just talking about whether there are any fundamental limitations on how testable the question is. And then also to get them thinking about the connection between the research questions and what seems to be the author's deep purpose. And then how relevant and innovative, again, both in the real world and also in research. And then for the data, thinking about the methods, structuring them into kinds of methods, and then the appropriateness of the methods for the purpose and for the research question. Whether there is innovation in those methods, and then, either way, whether there is or not, whether they're appropriate, given the field. And then,
one of the learning objectives of the course was to help the students understand the distinctions between data, experiment, theory, and model. And so we could pull this back into that learning objective there. And I don't pretend that that's an easy thing to understand, but, you know, it was no good.
Yeah, and we did, we had at least a few of those categories represented in the papers that they read. And we also got them to think about the assumptions really clearly. And again, they struggled with that too. You know, there were certain assumptions that they could identify pretty easily, but there are other ones that it took some doing, and it was good to go through it with them. And we also asked them to think about improvements that they would think of, that they would suggest for the authors at each stage here. Pretty much the same questions for the analysis, but we clearly separated those two steps out in the method section. And then in the results, now, we actually didn't get to the results all that often because we got sidetracked in that way. I think only once we jumped forward to the results, realizing that we were going to skip it. But these were the questions that we got them to think about, you know, what the key result is. And often they had as many different ideas about what the main result was as there were results in the paper, which is, I guess, just an interesting message about the fact that they all had different purposes in reading the paper, so they took home something different. We also, this is another learning objective here, the difference between observation and interpretation. So we got them to think about that at this point here. And then to connect from the assumptions that were made in the data collection and the analysis to the results. And then to think about how generalizable the results are, partly as a function of the assumptions and the data. Reductionism versus holism was another learning objective in our course, so we got them to think about that in the discussion section. And we've already introduced them to that idea. And this is another learning objective here, temporal and spatial scales. Oh, actually two, and patterns and processes. So that came in again. And this is another learning objective, the difference between uncertainty and bias. And then we also wanted them to start to think about, you know, the literature and its structuring role in papers, how papers fit in the context of literature. And so we wanted to get them to identify that and then figure out whether there are other literatures that might have been referred to that weren't, help them thinking about their own work in that same kind of way. And then how others, so not in this particular paper, but how others can build upon that work, either from what the authors said explicitly in the paper or from their own ideas, and then whether the paper actually changes the way that people think about these problems. And then we also gave them some structured ideas about how they might write a review. This is just, you know, the way I do it. I don't want to pretend that that's the only way to do it, because there are loads of ways, but we explained that it was really important first to understand and then to express your own idea of what the purpose of a paper is, so that one, the editor knows that you've got it, and that two, that you are clear that about whether at least the purpose has merit, you know? And if so, in identifying the purpose in that way, we argued, actually helps you to see what the other merits of the paper are. And then first to focus on the positives, not just because it helps people to hear the negatives, but also because it's a good exercise to do. So the positives of the paper, and then the negatives, the weaknesses and limitations, with both major and minor suggestions. So at that point we broke and separated the class into groups of three. And we had a rapporteur who was taking notes and then answering questions in the question period. A group leader who was organizing, keeping on task, keeping time, and just a contributor. And we circled, we had four classes in total, but three that we really had a significant chunk of time to discuss the paper, so we had them rotate through those three roles. I actually thought way too long and hard about how to distribute groups and those roles, and it all was wasted because our attendance was not all that great at this late point in the semester. I think we only had about 75% attendance, which totally threw off almost every group, you know. So I'm not sure how to solve that problem. And what we did was we went through each of the sections. We tried to, giving them 5 to 10 minutes to discuss amongst themselves and then coming back into a big group and having the rapporteur report back on their answers to each of the questions, and we discuss it all together with the three of us in the room in most cases.
How many students did you have?
34 students. So, yeah, so it was 11 groups at that. Mark?
And at this point, they're all reading, all the groups are reading the same paper?
That's right, yeah. So 4 papers over 4 days, and yeah, all groups read the same one on the same day. So, yeah, what more should we say about
that? So one of the other things that's worth saying here is that the one of the learning objectives of the course is to learn substantive details about at least 3 content areas in environmental science. And that's the sneaky part about this, because you then choose the papers. So the papers will contribute to their learning substantive content. You know, content is not irrelevant, but you just sneak it enough on them so they don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and it was fun to see how excited they got, having to read one paper at a time. In previous courses, I've often overwhelmed students with too much reading, and getting them to read one in a very structured way actually allowed them to get into the paper and really see its merits and the interesting things about it. So that was actually really rewarding.
Yeah, my sense of it was that there was a vast majority that really did a pretty good read of the paper because they knew they were going to have to sit in groups of 3 and be intelligent about this paper and eventually talk to all of us about it. So I sense that they just really engaged in reading.
Yeah, I guess we should say a bit about our choice of groups. We chose 3 because it seemed to be that perfect size where it's, you know, not just 2 when discussion can easily stagnate. But not, you know, but small enough so that pretty much everybody felt comfortable. I don't think we had anybody actually, even our shyest students, seemed to be just great in those groups of 3 or 4. And then we also picked groups in such a way that they were, for the most part, entirely different groups from the other group exercises. So they're always meeting new people, and that seemed to be an important part of the course for a lot of them, was being forced to meet new people. And I remember one of the students remarked that at the end, when we had a feedback session, remarked that she was really glad that we picked our groups for her, because she said that her partnerships had worked out a lot better when she had to do her own painting.
So what kinds of
papers
were there?
Well, Kyle will give you the details. I didn't remember them, but they were papers specific to the broad area that Ty was interested in, which was environment integration and you know, broad-ranging integrated work on the environment. So there were 3 quite distinct topics, but also on that area.
Yeah, see if I can remember. The first one, Bradshaw et al., is a paper on, it's a large synthetic review of the relationship between forest cover and deforestation and flooding. Mm-hmm. We had one paper on pollination, so insect pollination of agricultural crops as an ecosystem service.
And then the economic analysis of dams.
That's right. Yeah. So it wasn't just economic; it was ecological, hydrological, and economic of how habitat types contribute to the hydropower production by retaining water and then letting out some of it in the dry season when water is most limiting to that. And that was actually largely a modeling paper, although there was some data that they were using on it.
So did it
put
the, I guess, partly where I'm going with it, was sort of the balance between how much that puts kind of new content area, including things that might be quite difficult concepts, and how much it would be, perhaps a little bit familiar, or at least things were, or, you know, what that trade-off was.
Yeah.
The reading part, the skills part. You might notice that you've got a section on solid model. On reading a paper and understanding a model.
Yeah.
I think that really helped on reading papers to understand what a model was and how it built it.
Yeah.
So what I did before this cast, there was a great chunk on data analysis and environmental data.
Right.
So they all have a sense of where the data is coming from, what you do, how you analyze them. And then a big chunk of the course, the second part, was on ecosystem services as a vehicle for helping them to understand environmental integration and integration.
Okay.
And then a big chunk on models of the environment, all kinds of models.
Right. Okay.
So and then this came as the final part of the course. So, you know, in a sense they were well priced, but there's no question that all of the papers pushed the limits of their knowledge.
Yeah, they did. I picked papers that in this area of basically the science side of ecosystem services, which is understanding the benefits of ecosystems and the interactions between ecosystems and people for people. So I picked papers in that area partly because they actually are multi-tiered in an interesting way, so that to a large degree they're mostly about the fundamentals. So that the nitty-gritty details aren't big advances. The big advances are in the integration. And and the putting together of the pieces. So it was good in that way, because they didn't have to get really deeply into pretty much anything for any of the papers. I think we had most of that in the pollination case, because there was a super interesting interaction between pollinators that, in order to get it, they had to understand pollination a bit. But and I think most of them did get it after we walked through that, but it was definitely a bit of a distraction, and I think that's partly why we didn't get that far in that particular class. That's a good question, though, and I don't think I've thought about that in a really systematic way. I think it really just happens to happenstance that the papers had that multi-tiered kind of characteristic.
So when you say you didn't get very far, you give them a period of time and the discussion and they come back and you just talk about what they've done up to that point, so they haven't come to the discussion and they're hung up on.
So we basically did it one slide at a time. So, you know, we asked them to think about together about the research questions. So this slide full of questions, and then the data slide full of questions.
You said you had somebody looking after the time, but in a sense you're kind of
directing
the time itself by moving it forward.
Yeah, well, so we'd give them 5 to 10 minutes to cover the whole block of questions.
Right, so the leader of the group, and then report to the whole
group. The leader of each group would be keeping track of time within the set,
right.
and then we'd be keeping track of the 5 or 10 minutes that we'd given them, and then we'd all come back together. We got sidetracked because they had such different comments, and they were, you know, they were really participating a lot at this point. And also because of this multi-tiered effect and the fact that some of the issues that they were having with the paper were because they didn't fully understand some of the bits. And so we actually did some teaching of the content in helping them answer these questions. And so we managed to keep them on time for their bit, but when we came back together, sometimes we'd spend, you know, 15, 20 minutes after giving them only 10 minutes to talk about the group. Maite?
I'm going to take a quick thought. Did they see that paper for the first time in class, or it was an assignment ahead of time that they read?
Yeah.
And so they already sort of knew these questions because you gave them the questions for every
paper.
That's right.
So individually, they would have had several days to read the paper and to think about these questions. And then it was, in a way, they're reporting back, after the very first day, they're reporting back to their groups, in a sense, if they'd done that much preparation. I don't know how many went quite that far. And
so
then,
but that would have been implicit in it, not explicit, assignment to accompany the reading.
Well, we made it explicit that they did read the paper before.
Right, but were these questions delivered with the paper and saying, you know, here's how you're going to end up thinking about this paper as you read it, please.
Well, of the four classes that we had, we walked through this first on the first day. And so they knew that it was going to be the same set of questions on day 2, 3, and 4. I didn't actually give them a handout with the full set of questions, and lots of them came to class. And sometimes we'd give them 2 slides at a time to discuss, like the research question and the context. And then we had to flip back and forth because, you know, they hadn't written it down. So next time, it didn't make a lot of sense to have handouts or at least to post a Word document that they can print or something like that. So I'll just go to the take-home questions and we'll talk about other questions, or take-home messages rather. So just reminded them that reading and reviewing is critical and that their purpose has to come first in any of these exercises. And then to answer these questions of various kinds about the author's purpose especially. And then remind them that we told them about the purposes, strengths, weaknesses, and suggestions, all as components of the scientific review. So, more general questions about the process or comments? Yeah.
So how did you, after the fact, come to look at assessing what they had gotten out of this whole process?
This was at a late stage in the course, and we didn't have any graded assignments that were linked to this. The three of us were circulating around the room and listening to discussions. And we had 8% on the year that was assigned for class participation, so it was at that level, and they knew that in advance, and they were participating well at this stage, so we were assessing them in that respect. But we didn't have any actual assignments tied to it.
Yeah. So the broader context is the course was overgraded, in a sense. There were far too many grades, and there were endless amounts of exercises that were graded. And this came later on in the course. Nobody complained and said, how did you do all this work? You're not getting any grades. I mean, they by that stage got completely into the idea that the activities were their exams. And that the learning happened in the exam, which is the activities, and they also got the grades for the thing. And so in some senses, the grades were given for the learning, not just for the sum of the exam at the end. And by the stage you got to this point in the course, that was quite natural to them. Didn't seem to bother them at all.
Was there too long in the exam?
No.
Sorry, just to be clear, so it was their participation and their feedback in there.
For this particular module, that is the only contribution to their actual grade. Yes. So I should comment that we did have requests after we'd been through this, a number of students said, that is really useful. You know, I could use that in my proposal development and in the data analysis. And it's a question of whether the chicken or the egg comes first, because they use the data analysis and the modeling and the ecosystem services stuff in this section. So I don't know what the perfect answer is. I mean, I think there was dissent on that point, but
in other words, that you could have done it earlier in the term because it would have helped them do other things throughout the term.
On the other hand, it benefited from being later in the term, you know, so that they actually had the background on the various parts so that they could read the whole paper.
A piece of paper as opposed to something.
You know, Mary, in my sense of what the most they got from this exercise was not to be passive readers, to continually be asking questions. So why are they writing this? Who are they writing it for? What's the purpose? What is their question, you know? How are they going to get there?
Yeah, so could we pose something like this, hand out and give out to them on day one, so at some point in the course, we're going to be doing those papers in this way. They get some taste of this before, and then as they're reading the course, and then somewhere along the line, you're going to say, okay, we're going to do this today, you know, halfway through, or a quarter, or a third of the way through, and you can vary the level as you get into the course. I don't know, you get the...
With a simple paper to start with, introduce them to the idea of it, and then have the three later ones later. Yeah, that's a very interesting idea. You had a comment before that I offered.
I just thought when you were setting this up, I thought you had mentioned that they actually wrote for the mark on the review.
That's right. So two other assignments, the op-ed assignment, which was 9%, had an extra 3% component that was a peer review. So they wrote 500-word peer review, including...
That came all after this.
No, that was before.
Oh.
Yeah, that was before. And that's why I was commenting that some of them wanted more guidance on that, on how to do that, and what made it a review. And so that was what made it really important. Lessons to be learned in that.
So my comment was going to be, one of the things I struggle with, in I teach a lot of second year courses, is that when I try to assign some kind of research thing, it's like Wikipedia is the source. Right? I'm wondering if there's somehow I could use this to do something early on in the term that they could contrast what Wikipedia says about something versus something in a more scientific article that would make them understand. Like, they don't understand why everything, why they can't, just can't use Wikipedia for everything. Right? I don't know, do other people struggle with this? Well, yeah, it is, and that makes it even more of a challenge, but, you know, it's like when you get a research thing back, and that's the only thing they reference.
So, Mary, one of the things we try to emphasize in this course was that research is not merely gathering information.
Yeah.
That's just the first thing to do. You've got to be able to process the information you've gathered, you've got to think about it, you've got to assimilate it somehow, to digest it. And critical reading is the only way to get at what's lying underneath the information.
Yeah, one of our learning goals was to be able to discern from multiple kinds of sources of information and to know their purpose and value. It is interesting that in our feedback, the midterm feedback, we asked them how well they thought the course was meeting their learning objectives. And maybe a third of the comments that we got back were on the research skills part, were of the flavor of, I don't think I've learned any new skills here, but I guess we've done some practicing. But then if you look at the other comments that they made, it was clear that at least the majority of them were thinking of research skills in a very, very narrow sense of finding the information. You know, it's like by search, you know, plus I don't know what. And when we reminded, after we had that midterm evaluation, we walked through the learning objectives again, in particular, focusing on that research skill part, and pointing out that actually there were a bunch of other things in there that they had learned. And we didn't get that comment on the final, not what was actually on the final evaluation. So,
yeah,
it was interesting to see their progression in thinking about research as a skill. Francis, do you have another thing? Okay.
Yes. What was the, I guess on the doing of paper messages, that the students have a doing a review?
Well, this is actually about referring to the reading. You're right that this is not clear. So the student's purpose in reading the paper.
Okay, what did they give that?
That was the first mock answer, I guess. But
you told us too.
Yeah. But we quickly got past that, and when we got them thinking about, you know, why would this information be interesting or relevant to them, and they all had different ideas about that.
In other words, you tried to get them to project themselves into a setting of some kind.
Yes. I'm pretty sure that after the very first answer of you were reading it because you told us to do it, they understood that they were supposed to be thinking about the paper in a much broader sense. So if I came across this paper and I wanted to read it, what would my purpose be? So, you know, getting beyond that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of curious, but in, you know, did they come up with that? I realized that he said skill wasn't just a failure of actually applying it there, so I realized that. I don't know.
So, this one is, why are you reading this paper? Why would you want to read and review this paper?
Very
similar to the paper I had.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, and eventually, I recall in the class, we said to them, so who are the people who might be reading this paper, and what would be their motives in reading the paper? Probably the policy maker, or no, the ecologist, or there's someone who's decided to do research on depollination of crops in California. Mm.
How long were these papers?
10 to 15
journal
pages.
Yes,
May?
My purpose in coming to this seminar was very selfish, because I teach at a standard level class where I require that my students write a paper very much in this respect, but unlike you, have a set number of days where you actually go through the entire process of students. You know, my requirement comes at the end of the term, where, you know, they know about it because they know what the requirements are, but then suddenly, boom, you know, after they've learned about oceanography, they have to review X number of papers and write. So how do we, as instructors for these kinds of classes, integrate this part in a more condensed manner so we can actually deliver these types of skills to students without having to do our students need to go to a course like this in the second year, or do we say, well, one of the requirements is to write a really good paper, and so you must have all these skills? Because when you're learning so much about oceanography and really just want them to see, well, what are the main purposes of mind making them write the paper, is for them to realize that there is a huge process of investigation, analysis, etc., that goes into producing all the data that they've learned about.
So let me give you a broad context on this, May. This NBR 300 is part of the core course in the environmental science program. The primary objective of this course is not, in fact, much content learning, even though there's an enormous amount that goes on. But the prime purpose is acculturation, understanding of the field, understanding the nature of environmental science, and bringing the students together as a cohort. What we want to teach them are very broad skills that are applicable to all of their courses, and they take disciplinary courses outside of the core that make up their areas of concentration. So this is a very generalized kind of skill that comes out of this section of the course. And it would be silly to teach this kind of skill in the abstract, and that's why not only does this lead into the specific exercising of the skill in the paper to class, but in fact through the entire course they have to write papers. Now the very simple way to do it, to overcome the problem I think you're pointing out, is in fact to start them writing their paper on the very first day of the class, and you have their mind sprinkled throughout the class, so that when they get three-quarter way through the class, they're three-quarter way through their paper. And they get marked for every one of the deadlines along the way, including peer review of each other's drafts.
So we did that for the final proposal project. So the project was to write an extensive proposal, a literature-based inspired proposal of work that they might say in a master's. And we had five deadlines. We had a topic that was worth 1%. Outline and
preliminary paper, so list of
bibliography, annotated bibliography and outlines that was worth 5%.
There was a firstly a title, secondly a synopsis and the results of the search, then an annotated bibliography on the paper they found, and then a first draft and then a final draft
and a peer review
between the two drafts.
Yeah, and it was fun. None of them complained. I mean, they complained about having lots of things to do.
We just said, no, it's them. Sure.
But they really appreciated it. And it was more when we had too many things going on at the same time. But they really appreciated having multiple deadlines. I remember one student in the feedback section when we discussed it, I don't remember what it was, right at the end. She said that, you know, it would be really helpful to have a bit more guidance about what you actually write in the paper. And this was, I think she was commenting based on, right, because she'd had to change direction quite a bit. And we pointed out that she'd changed direction
at every point, and, you know, four different deadlines, or three, I guess, three of the interim ones, and that actually we'd helped her a fair bit on that front. And yeah. She realized that afterwards. And but, you know, they definitely did a lot of growing throughout those sessions.
They actually also, we started at halfway through. I think we assigned the paper halfway through the course, and they requested it earlier. In the discussion at the very end, they were saying that they would have liked to spend it right at the beginning, coming up with a topic, because they changed so many times by the end.
In the proposal you're talking
about. Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
And the reason we didn't start it right in the very beginning was because we didn't want to have too many of those parallel assignments. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Sorry.
How do you feel spending their peer review with the LDONs?
Well, we have guidelines in the assignments that explain the importance of not being too harsh, and we give some tips on that front. We had them send out peer reviews to both us and to their colleagues at the same time. The first time it was just written, so they just exchanged that 500 words. It was 500 words total, but it was interspersed between bulletin comments, tracks in Word, and then a blurb at the end of the summary. And then the second time we did it, we actually had a face-to-face meeting.
And the trick is that they're
swapping.
Swapping. So you
did
the review
each other's
thing.
Do they get marked based on the peer review they gave to the student, or do the students who wrote the paper get any marks based on
Washington
Center
series,
you
got
to get a bad peer review, and that was.
So on the op-ed, we only graded the final op-ed. In other courses, I've graded the first draft and then graded. I graded the first draft, right, and I grade the peer review in part based on how much they packed, which. It's a huge amount of work, because it means you have to read both at the same time, really carefully, and it's ridiculous. So we didn't do that this time, and we graded, they exchanged first draft, and we only graded final draft. We gave them the grade on the peer review based on both content and style, so like presentation of their comments.
But there was one student who came to me and said, well, the thing I heard was terrible, what am I going to do? I said, well, that's a very interesting challenge. You're going to have to be sure that all is respectful and make sure that your review is written in a way that pays attention to.
And it was amazing. Her review was amazing. Like, such fast.
And also, you were saying you're going to review that person, and they were here. So one was doing one, and they were doing one.
I think on the op-ed we allowed them to choose, but then on the final...
But where did he list it out for you? Group manager group?
Oh, no, I'm just saying, so they weren't picking a friend, and they weren't...
No. Most of the course we missed it.
Right.
Well, random with some tinkering.
the only groups I tinkered with were the ones that had the data analysis. And I wanted to make sure that there was at least one person in each of the three-person groups that had some statistical capability. And I was really careful not to tell them that, otherwise they would become obsessed and think it was a statistical exercise. But we presented the groups and then it happened. Yeah, there was one very trusted student in the class, and they had a manuscript because he just terrorized the first two of them. Far too monstrous for him. He terrorized them as well, but it is possible.
Did everyone
find
500 words?
For the op-ed, it was 500 words. Does everyone know what an op-ed is? An op-ed is an opposite editorial piece. It's on the opposite page to the editorial in the newspaper, so it's 700 to 1100 word piece. It's an opinion piece, basically.
Okay.
An expert by the newspaper, usually, yeah, mm-hmm. An expert. That was our attempt to teach them how to talk about science and research to a lay audience, because it's all about that. The rules are completely different. We had Michael Byers come into the class and talk about his experiences writing op-eds.
not, you know, in hindsight, they appreciated it. I'm not in hindsight sure how useful it was.
Yeah.
For two reasons. One, because he's not a scientist, right? So he's not doing what we're asking them to do in terms of communicating science. And then partly also because he walked in there and told them that it was all art and there's no method to it. And you didn't know how to do it well.
And then to do with having contact with which is completely wrong. And you might have more.
What about the review of the proposal? How long was that?
Thousand words,
I think.
Yeah, it was longer. Can't remember for sure. I can send you the assignment outline.
The final proposal?
Yeah.
That's only like too many words. It was like up to 5,000.
No, but the
review.
It was, yeah, I think it was like we had a big range. It was like 300 to 1,000 or something. For mm-hmm. So that they knew that it didn't have to be a lot, but yeah. But originally, it was up to 1,000.
And how, I'm just curious, how do you, I mean, some of them write really badly, right?
Yes.
So how do you balance the review in itself and the way the review was written?
We actually didn't mark, so the presentation slash style part of the review was almost entirely for tone and you know, order of points and at that level of presentation. I didn't grade anybody down for misspelling, you know, as long as it was comprehensible. That was, I think there was one that wasn't really comprehensible, and so I guess I did grade them down a little bit. But you know, I had totally different expectations for presentation and style, and I think we all did that.
So the only marking down that happened in that sense was if weaknesses of style and usage got in the way of understanding what was being written.
Yeah, but we had higher standards on the paper, obviously. Yeah.
For instance, students have to take an English or a writing course. What is their only experience? The students, now most of these students, when they were in the science program, they have to write an essay to get in. And there is a book for them. We have about 50% of our rejection level could be very flat and informed. And the other 50 also be kind of writing. You know, they're quite old.
But other than that, they're just standard practice science English requirements, right?
Yes,
I think.
Yeah.
One question about the paper reading. Did you introduce them to a formal debate? Like sort of the day to day position?
So we talked about having a debate and we decided to have town hall meeting.
I'll admit here, I have to diminish the word debate. So I said it's always the same as you have to debate, which is all about interpersonal points scored and not about increasing our collective learning.
And I would admit that I
And somebody pointed out to me that I argue aggressively, but I see it fine. And I made that quite clear to the class that the point is to increase our collective knowledge. And so we have something else we look forward to debate. And so we had a town hall meeting.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's been multiple town hall meetings.
We had
mid-town hall meetings in which some controversial topic or local issue was discussed by people from different perspectives. But in the very formal town hall meeting,
we got interesting feedback on that actually. Because a number of the students actually requested that we make it a debate next year. And then we had a discussion about our reasoning here, and we suggested that, you know, because there are a few students that were very outspoken, said that they enjoyed it so much more. Joe pointed out the competitive dynamic, and they said they enjoyed that. And then we pointed out that, you know, probably a minority of the students did really enjoy it, the ones who feel like they're scoring points, and the others maybe don't so much.
Well,
so
I don't know what the answer is.
I know that there are some students who are in the debating club and they want to actually debate formally.
Yes.
That's one issue. But you asked whether students were required to take on a position in relation to the readings that were being done. Is that right?
Were you sort
of focusing on the readings? Or
I know the other part.
Yeah. I know you know about the town hall. So
the town hall meeting was actually about a couple of papers,
like contradictory papers,
mutually.
But not in the context of this reading.
But not in the context of this reading. And there wasn't a lot, I mean, we just didn't have any kind of debate in this exercise. There were certainly some dissent and differing opinions.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a useful exercise. You actually have students pick a purpose for reading, and then you have them discuss it and come back into the group, right? Then you say, okay, you guys are the managers, you guys are the scientists, you guys are the council, and they read it from that perspective, and then they can come in and say, well, no, and argue about the same paper.
That did happen in the town where we people were assigned roles. So there's fish farming in the West Coast. Should we have a moratorium?
Right.
And you are the community people, and you are the industry people, and you are the NGO, and you are the environmental group, and you are the government scientists. So we could put them in groups and they go out and research and get all the information and come with prepared statements. And they're opposing the side. The best of the community.
So about this reading exercise, one of the interesting things that you started off by saying was that your experience was that you didn't have a structure or a framework which you could use and apply every time you had a paper to read. And we've all sort of acquired that, but you had one mentor who showed you how that worked.
For reviewing.
For reviewing, yes. Then a little later there's been a couple of questions about whether we should do it before or after. Could we use some of the skills they've learned here to help inform students how to prepare other things and so on and so forth. I think the interesting thing about this whole exercise is that it has provided them very succinctly with a framework for thinking about academic content and the specific case of the paper. And it was mentioned before, I think maybe there could be an argument for getting that framework visible early and then maybe spelling or pacing the opportunities to practice applying that framework throughout the term. With these kinds of exercises, with those papers late in the term, just like you did, because of all the reasons that you've explained, but that maybe some of the framework issues are at least introduced or somehow incorporated into the class earlier on, and some of those framework maybe just that it's almost only a single page of the framework could be applied in other courses to help with the writing process or with the reviewing of or at least with the use of scientific articles prior to writing the paper. It's the framework which helps people do better in all of these different aspects of scientific thinking. Maybe that framework could be articulated for everybody.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I think that we will do that, likely.
Mm-hmm.
Were you quite explicit with it, saying this is what you should take away out of the framework, or is it more that you just apply it to these papers and say they're going to pick it up hopefully?
Well, I didn't want to be dictatorial about it, so we did, I told them these are the questions that I asked, and I, you know, these were the ones that we went through.
And they were on the screen.
Yeah, they were on the screen. They were the ones that we went through in that order in the classes. I did suggest that there was great value to having a framework, even if they had different questions that they themselves came up with. I think we added one question in response to that initial brainstorming about the kinds of questions that one would ask. But I think for the most part, they coincided actually pretty nicely. And then there were a few that they, you know, that they didn't mention that I had already. So I think they're all pretty happy with the list for what that's worth.
Just wondering if they'll take it away.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I think that would definitely be one reason why it would make sense to write it up into a Word document as much as a PowerPoint presentation.
Well, that's an hour. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Well, sounds like we've got other issues that would be fun to discuss.